Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to this latest OIES podcast, which is being brought to you by the GAS programme. My name is James Henderson. I'm Head of GAS Research at the Institute, and today I'm with my colleagues Mike Forward and Jack Sharples. We're talking on the morning of September the 20th, just to date stamp this, and we're going to have a review of global gas markets because we haven't chatted about that for a little while. So, gentlemen, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, Jim.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. Good morning.
Right, Mike. Well, look, let me, as tradition dictates, come to you first and give us a quick review of where we are on gas prices in Europe and around the world.
Now, prices in September and sort of late August went above into double digits again, above $10, $11, sometimes $12, slightly higher in Asia, and we'll come on to that, why that's sort of happening, compares to single digits sort of back in July, certainly in Europe. And some of that has been to do with the concerns. The market got spooked by the potential strikes in Australia, again, which we'll talk about, but also, and I think Jack will mention Norwegian maintenance sort of restricting the flows into Europe. So the prices have hardened up quite a bit on the back of the strikes and Norwegian maintenance.
Okay, well, look, we'll come back to the outlook for prices. As you say, there's a number of issues that have affected it and will affect it going forward. But Jack, let me come to you first then, and let's talk a little bit about Europe. I mean, we normally talk about Russian supply, but I think that's been pretty static, but you can give us an update on that. But what are the other issues around pipeline supply into Europe that we should be talking about?
If I start with the no news is good news first, to get that out of the way, I think we're seeing Azeri's supply via the Trans-Adriatic pipeline pretty stable at its capacity, just over 30 million cubic metres a day, nothing really changing there. The Algerian supply to Spain has been pretty stable since late July, but the Azeri supply to Italy, although it was stable since early June, we have seen some quite sharp fluctuations in the first half of September, although that's quite possibly just sort of counterparties holding long-term contracts, sort of balancing their nominations against any fluctuations on the punto di scambio virtuale in Italy. Russian supply, as you mentioned, Central Europe, it's been pretty stable. The transit via Ukraine, looking at about 30 to 35 million cubic meters per day since February. But we have seen more fluctuations in Russian supply into southeastern Europe. So that's via Turkish stream and via Bulgaria. Now, that's predominantly driven by supply to Hungary. So since the Turkish stream maintenance in June, we've seen those volumes creep up. And in fact, I would suggest that in sort of the last couple of weeks, we've been actually getting pretty close to the technical capacity at certain parts of that pipeline, not only looking at the capacity from Turkey into Bulgaria, but given that Hungary is the ultimate market there, pretty well hitting capacity on the border from Serbia to Hungary. So maybe reaching a bit of a ceiling there.
The big elephant in the room then, which Mike's already mentioned, is being Norwegian supply, where we've seen some significant levels of maintenance. Talk us through what's happened there, what the impact on prices has been, and how long you think it's going to last.
What we might consider normal for the Norwegian winter peaks, we would estimate their capacity to produce, process, and export gas by pipeline at about 350 million cubic meters per day. Normally, Norwegian supply is pretty seasonal, so you'll see a dip during the summer, and they normally conduct their maintenance around September, so you'll see it come down markedly. Now, last year, To put it bluntly, they absolutely hammered it. They were clearly producing as much as they could. They had clear commercial incentives to do so. So there wasn't the same seasonal shape. Now, I think the knock-on impact of that has been that some of that maintenance has been delayed to this summer. And in fact, in certain cases, that maintenance has taken longer than expected. So it's not just about production. It's also about their major processing plants, but also some technical issues and maintenance on their pipelines as well. So this year, during the winter, during Q1, Norwegian supply peaked at about 330 million cubic meters a day, so about 20 below what you might consider the normal peak. Then during the summer, we've seen really heavy impacts of maintenance. So in June, daily supply dipped below 200 million cubic meters a day. So that's really, that was pretty well unheard of. We had a brief rebound in July in the first half of August. But then we've seen more maintenance and more technical issues, and it's really brought that down from about 300 million cubic meters a day in mid-August to a low of around 110 to 120 million cubic meters per day in the first 10 days of September. And that was the Norwegian supply really bottoming out. That flow is now slowly recovering. We went past 150 million cubic metres a day on Monday, the 18th of September, and the maintenance schedule published by Gasco, the pipeline operator, suggests that normal production, processing and transportation capacity should get back to normal by early October. So I would suggest that the next 3 weeks are when we are going to see the impact of everything sort of settling back down again.
Okay, and I mean, just to cover the last bit of flow, I mean, has LNG send out been compensating for that lack of Norwegian gas, or have you just been seeing kind of lower flows overall?
No, we've been seeing lower flows overall. So there's been a really marked decline in daily send out from European regas terminals since late April, really, when we were seeing just over 500 million cubic meters per day of send out. And that fell to an absolute low of 250 million cubic meters a day on the 20th of August. Now, it has rebounded a bit since then to around 320, maybe 340 million cubic meters per day. But I think that if you look at the inventories, the storage tanks at European regas terminals, in August, maybe beginning of August, you were looking at about 50% full. Now you're looking at something closer to two-thirds full. So I think there is a sort of sense that we're waiting for winter to begin for those stocks to be released onto the market.
Okay, well, look, we'll come back to the overall storage picture later on in the podcast. But before we go there, talk to me about the implications for demand here. I mean, supplies are down. What's the demand picture looking like? I mean, I'm guessing, you know, implied demand from your supply calculations.
So in the first 8 months of the year, taking it all as a single block, we're looking at demand being about 15% down year on year. And that percentage decline has been pretty consistent across most months of the year to date. Well, I should say that in August, the percentage decline did narrow to about 7.5%. But that's obviously reflecting the fact that we use a lot of gas for space heating. So when you get into the real height of summer, plenty of solar kicking around as well, then that's when you're going to see sort of the smallest differential, let's say, between what you might normally see in a winter time of a cold winter and a mild winter. You have a huge differential in demand. In the summertime, you sort of narrow that out. I think in terms of daily demand, absolute volumes, we did see summer demand bottom out really from the beginning of June to around the 21st of August. So we were looking at a corridor of maybe 500 to 700 million cubic meters per day. Now, in the first half of September, we are seeing that demand starting to creep back up again. But I must say it's looking pretty similar levels to this time last year.
Well, that's interesting stuff. I mean, it's certainly about sort of the demand kind of declines, at least bottoming out. Mike, let me come to you and keep on this topic of demand, if I may. You know, we're seeing demand kind of starting to rebound in Europe. What's going on in Asia and the rest of the sort of the major importing regions? Are we seeing demand rebound there as well?
Yeah, let's get to the elephant in the room first. So China, we are seeing remarkably quite buoyant gas demand in China, despite the fact that reports of economic activity sort of being weak. Now, yeah, it could be that in the industrial areas, the heavy industries, demand is a little bit better there. But demand is up through July, which is the latest data we have figures for, is about 15 BCM up, which is about sort of 7%. For the whole year, it could well be over 20 BCM. Overall demand will be up. Now, production's up, pipeline imports just slightly above last year. Russia's a lot higher, but Central Asia's down a bit. So LNG imports are sort of picking up a lot of the slack there. So they sort of started growing really from about April to be above last year's levels. And now they're looking very, very strong. So it could well be up 10 or 12 BCM this year. That is soaking up quite a lot of the LNG. Elsewhere in Asia, Japan has been very, very weak so far this year. It does look like September they're recovering a little bit. Korea's been sort of down a little bit. Taiwan's been sort of flattish. And India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, a little bit of recovery we've been seeing, but nothing substantial. Again, it's Southeast Asia, which has been roaring ahead, especially Thailand. And September's looking at almost record levels going to that area of the world. And obviously we've got Philippines and Vietnam have now come on. But all the countries in that area, Indonesia, Malaysia, Singapore, they're all importing quite a bit more LNG. Sort of trend which has been going for almost the last 3 years, month by month by month. So Asia is sort of soaking up quite a lot of the rising LNG supply, which is continuing to rise with Freeport now fully back on So we see a lot more LNG available in the last few months compared to last year.
Okay, well, that's interesting you raised that question of LNG supply, because one of the concerns actually has been that there might be some outages from Australia because of strikes. But prices would suggest that that hasn't happened or hasn't had much effect. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, obviously, as we said, the prospect of strikes spooked the market. Now, the first one was Woodside at the Northwest Shelf, but that got resolved. And so now we're talking about Gorgon and Wheatstone with Chevron. In terms of the volumes coming out of Gorgon and Wheatstone, I mean, basically Gorgon is roughly the capacity of about 2 BCM a month. Wheatstone is just over 1 BCM a month. So in total, 3 BCM a month is about 5.5% of total global supply. But apart from a couple of technical problems at Wheatstone, which caused for a few days for the production to be down, we've not really seen any interruption to deliveries, offtakes from the plants at all. So I think the strikes seem to be sort of being threatened, but we've had no impact yet. And I think the parties, or certainly Gorgon and Wheatstone, want to go to the Australian authorities to see if they can sort it out. So the rising prices, we said, was really spooked the market a little bit, but we haven't seen yet any diminution of the exports leaving Gorgon and Wheatstone. And obviously, even if there were, it would take a week or two before it affected deliveries into the key markets. I mean, a lot of their energy goes to Japan from both plants, and then China, South Korea and Taiwan. There's those four big Asian markets which are taking almost all Gorgon and Wheatstone's output, with the odd cargo to other Asian markets.
Okay, so as you look forward then, I mean, there's obviously a risk that will kick in, as you say, in 2 or 3 weeks' time. But from a demand perspective, we're heading into a kind of Asian, North Asian winter. You're going to expect some more demand growth as we go through the next 6 months or so?
Yeah, I think so, especially around China. And obviously, as we enter the winter, Japan is likely to recover somewhat. I think we are looking, again, at mainly the big four buyers that buy from Gorgon and Wheatstone, possibly increasing demand there. And that will soak up the much higher available supply we're seeing now through the winter months.
And that available supply is coming from where? What's growing most rapidly?
Well, it's quite right to the US. The US is up quite a lot. Obviously, there have been issues around Calcasieu Pass, but it seems to be producing. Freeport's now fully back on. So year-on-year comparison is pretty strong for Freeport. I mean, that's a 20 BCM a year plant. So we've seen much higher volumes out of that. And there's the prospect also of Tangguh Train 3 in Indonesia sending out commissioning cargoes. There was talks about Arctic 2 Train 1 possibly coming on. We might see a commissioning cargo from that, but maybe not until to January 2024, where we see significant cargoes from that. And Coral FLNG is now, the Mozambique one, is getting up to full capacity. So all these little things are sort of being ramped up and all adding to the available supply. Which is kind of what we were saying at the beginning of the year. You know, the overall global growth this year has been less than we thought, in part because we had extended maintenance at places like Sakhalin and also some feed gas issues again in Nigeria, which has sort of kept things down a little bit. But supply is looking pretty buoyant at the moment to cover the winter. And if it doesn't get too cold, then fingers crossed, we'll probably be okay.
But to be clear, this isn't the wave of LNG that we're expecting to arrive. That comes later.
Yeah, oh yes, this is a few fingers rather than two hands waving, I guess, is what you're looking at. Is 24, I think, towards the end, we're going to see probably Golden Pass coming on, which is a big one. 25, it'll ramp up, and then 26, 27 is going to be, you know, be lights out, basically, in terms of the growth of supply.
Okay, so here we are then with prices back in low double digits, a contrast between European demand being, well, bottoming out, but still not being desperately strong, and Asian demand moving on a bit more apace. So, Jack, what's the overall impact been on storage in Europe, which is that kind of great balancing item that's always out there? Where are we with storage right now?
The headline figure is that we've finally surpassed 100 BCM of stocks on the 16th of September, and we currently stand at 100.3 BCM on the 18th of September. So that's 94.2% full. So that's where we are at present. Now, to put that into a bit of context, European storage net injections usually continue to around the 20th to the 25th of October. And that's when we see sort of the winter demand really start to kick in and we start seeing net storage withdrawals. Last year, we really pushed the boat out a little bit and continued with our net storage injections to around the 15th of November. So that was obviously enabled by mild start to the winter, a surge in LNG send out, and obviously a bit of consumer behavior as well going into that. So potentially, under normal circumstances, we might have another 4 weeks of potential injection time going on. If we were to really push the boat out and have a repetition of last year, that could be as high as 8 weeks of, you know, time for net storage injections. So looking at where those daily net injections are, they have fallen away markedly since the 20th of August. So we were seeing storage being replenished at a rate of around 300 million cubic meters per day. That fell to around 100 million cubic meters a day in the first 10 days of September, and then actually dipped to effectively zero on the 13th of September. And it looked for a little while like that would be the almost, you know, the stoppage of net injections. But we have seen it rebound a little bit. We're back to around 100 million cubic meters per day on the 16th to the 18th of September. Now, if you think about if that continues, to get storage completely full, we would need to see another 5 BCM of injections. Now, if you do that over 4 weeks, that's a rate of about 180 million cubic meters per day. If you push the envelope out to mid-November, then you're looking at about 90 million cubic meters per day over the next 8 weeks. So what I'm trying to say is if the weather stays reasonably mild and supply remains reasonably robust, and especially with getting Norwegian pipeline supply back up and running, there's actually really no reason why, if we continue injections out to late October, maybe even to the beginning of November, that we're not going to see storage facilities absolutely full. The only other thing I would add regarding storage, there is a little bit of disparity across Europe as to the extent to which capacity is full in percentage terms. So you do have some LNG importing countries that have pretty small storage facilities relative to their demand. So not only Spain and Portugal, but also Poland. And there you're looking at 98 to 100% full. And then there are some other countries where you have much larger storage that is, below 90% full. So Belgium, France and Latvia, you're looking at about 88, 89% full. The rest of the EU countries are sort of somewhere in between. The only other thing to add as well is obviously the question of using Ukrainian storage has come up as well. And so Ukrainian storage stocks are about 2-3 BCM higher than they were this time last year. It looks like we're seeing the physical movement of gas into Ukrainian storage. There's plenty of capacity there. Obviously, some concern about the physical security of gas being stored there. But I think we're seeing it used, but at a relatively modest rate, let's say. And obviously, we are moving ever closer to the start of winter. So there is a pretty limited time frame for injecting into storage.
OK, thanks, Jack. I mean, Mike, let me come back to you on this. So look, we've got storage at pretty much full levels. Yes, there's a bit more capacity there, but I mean, we're as close to tank tops as I think we've been for a long time. We've had this Norwegian maintenance, which I guess one could interpret as being probably the only reason that prices aren't significantly into single digits. But where do we go from here? I mean, if we have a warm winter, are we looking at significantly lower prices than these levels? Or do you think there's something to keep the prices up?
Yeah, I mean, the market is still fundamentally tight. The storage is the blip that could force prices down. If you know, the heating season is delayed and storage is full, then where does all the LNG go? As we said, it is being pulled away to Asia. So there's strong demand in Asia. I think it was Sinopec have just put out a tender for a ship of cargoes for a year. I think they've just accepted a tender for that. So the Chinese are coming back into the spot market, which will soak up quite a bit of the extra supply. I think it depends when we get into tipping over into the heating being switched on in Europe, because at that point in time, would you expect gas normally would start to be taken out of storage to meet that. But if there's plentiful LNG, even with Asia demand growing, then especially with the new German import terminals, the LNG can go in there. And rather than taking gas out of storage, the LNG can be, go to the German and Central European markets. There's a report, I think, a few days ago, that I think 40% of Czech gas demand is now supplied by LNG by Germany. So the LNG is getting to those markets. So it does give another option for the, you know, the consumers or the buyers of gas, rather than take gas out of storage, especially in Germany, and use a bit more LNG. I think it does depend on when we flip to the cold weather and when the heating season starts. And if it's delayed, then, as Jack was saying, you could see storage absolutely full, in which case, if the demand in the rest of the world for LNG is not as strong as we think, then you could see downward pressure on prices. So it really does depend, I think, when the heating season starts.
Okay. I mean, Jack, coming back to you, I mean, obviously, similar question, but this Norwegian maintenance has definitely helped the market. But when that comes back, things are looking pretty relaxed in Europe as we go head into winter.
I would agree with Mike. I think we are still fundamentally in a tight market. It looks a lot better than it was 12 months ago. My big concern really is how much we take out of storage this winter, because our net storage injections in the summer of 2023 were the second smallest since 2014. Now, if we, you know, have, as Mike said, if we have a relatively mild winter, obviously we've got new LNG regas capacity coming online in Germany and also Le Havre in northern France as well. And in southeastern Europe as well, we should be seeing the Alexandroupoli FSRU in Greece arriving in December. So if all of that supply means that we take less out of storage, we have a relatively mild winter, we end the winter with storage stocks still pretty high, and we have another summer in 2024 of not needing to inject too much, then that's obviously going to have a softening effect on prices. Whereas if you flip that on its head and say, well, you know, if it's cold not only here but also in Asia, some LNG gets pulled away, we draw down very heavily on storage, then suddenly the task of replenishing in the summer of 2024 looks a bit more challenging. Not challenging in physical terms, but certainly a little more upward pressure on prices, let's say. So I think it's, the situation remains somewhat finely balanced, but at least we are in as good a position as we could possibly be given the circumstances.
And just to go push things out a little bit further, I mean, one of the things that, Jack, you've been talking about is being the Ukraine transit issue. I mean, it sounds like even if we lose Ukraine transit at the end of 24, which is seeming relatively likely given some of the stuff that's coming out of the Ukrainian authorities, that's not really a huge concern. I mean, would you interpret it like that?
I would say that it would have primarily a relatively localized impact. So if you look at where Ukrainian transit gas goes, once it's crossed the territory of Ukraine, it's primarily serving the Slovak and Austrian markets now. It used to be the case that Italy was the end of the line for that sort of delivery route, but even the Italians are now receiving very little pipeline gas from Russia, and in fact, Eni is taking Gazprom to arbitration over that very issue. So I think that if we see the end of transit on the 31st of December 2024, two things will happen, really. Firstly, Slovakia and Austria will lean more heavily on their neighbours to physically get hold of supply. So that will, as Mike said, draw more LNG landing in northern Germany, down through Germany, across the border into Austria, and down through the Czech Republic into Slovakia. I think we'd also see more LNG coming into northern Italy and more of the physical west to east movement of gas from Italy into Austria. So that's how we would get around it. But of course, the other thing to add is the Ukrainians need gas as well. Most of what they import physically from Central Europe. There is a small amount, about 8 to 10% of their total imports, is what we would call backhaul or virtual reverse, where gas destined for Central Europe is off-taken as it's passing through Ukraine. So on paper, it might go to Vienna and back, but in physical terms, it gets off-taken in Ukraine. Obviously, if transit stops, then that flow of gas stops as well. So it won't just be a case of making sure that Slovakia and Austria are supplied, but it's also making sure that there's sufficient gas in the region to supply Ukraine as well.
Interesting take, and obviously we'll keep an eye out on that as negotiations or lack of them continue. But for the meantime, gentlemen, thanks very much indeed for your input. That's been a fascinating discussion about the current state of the gas market as we head into winter. We'll look forward to seeing you again soon. There'll be another gas program podcast in a couple of weeks' time. But until then, I hope you've enjoyed listening to this podcast. Do take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity or China research programmes, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.